Hi everyone and welcome to Take 10 for Torah number 682. I hope you're well. Any questions, comments, suggestions, recommendations, or sponsorships, please email me at rabbiismach@take10fortorah.org. So the story that we have in this week's parsha told us is where two parents, Rivka and Yitzchak, have two different children, Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov and Esav are very different from each other, and this is a unique situation because when Avraham and Sarah had two children, namely Yitzchak and Yishmael, they weren't both Sarah's children. So, okay, there wasn't a great example of two children, one family, and two drastically different identities. It was a little bit different. But here, we have Yaakov and Esav going in very, very different directions. Now, let's not discuss right now the element of, you know, did Yitzchak have the wrong call on Esav? Was Esav somehow defrauding Yitzchak into thinking that he was better than he was? Let's just talk about the inherent point of not all children being the same. One was a Yodea Tzayid, one was really good at hunting, one did that outdoorsman type thing, and one was the Yoshev Ohalim, and that was Yaakov. So we know, and we've discussed in the past, the idea that each one of us as individuals is at a different status when it comes to our own free will. Rav Dessler explains this beautifully. He says, and I've mentioned this many times before, the idea that we are, or we should imagine ourselves as if we are in a war, and there's a front line, and the trenches are dug at that front line. And now the area behind me is already conquered, and the area behind my opponent is already conquered. We're really fighting over this one location, this one spot. I try to push him forward. In that case, this trench becomes conquered territory. The same way, he says, of course, with free will. When it comes to my decision-making, there are decisions, although technically I can make them, I can do crazy things, I won't, because that's just not where I'm at. That's not where I'm holding. I've already fought those battles. There are areas where there's not a possibility that I can do. They're just too hard. They're too difficult. I'm never going to do them. That's land which has been conquered on the other side. Right now, I have my unique Nekudas HaBechira, my point of free will, my point of free choice, where I need to make a decision, where I am struggling. Not the things that are too easy, not the things that are too hard for me to do yet. That is where I am. We each have a different place. So that's important to remember, that we are all on a sliding scale. We are all variable. One next to another person, we can't compare the circumstances or the battles we've fought, the things we have not yet fought. We're all at a different trench, so to speak. Okay, now the idea of uniqueness and the individual, we have in a lot of different places. We have famously the story of the man being created from one person. So Volba goes at length. He discusses the idea of Lafikach Nivra Adam Yechidi. Why is it that man was created individually? And he says, it's Lamentcha Shakal Hama'abid Nasha Achas Miso Ma'alav Akasav Kilu Ibed Olamali. The Gemara tells us it's because if a person, God forbid, murders a person, it's as if you killed the whole world, because you see the potential of any one person. But also, Rav Volbe says that the yechidus shel Adam harishon lo nevda lazaro im ribui bnei ha'adam. The individuality of Adam harishon was not lost, even though he had many children and many generations. The human being should be seen as inherently unique and inherently individual, as the Gemara says, k'shem shepartzu fehem domo enam domos kach deosem. So too, the same way their faces are not the same, so too our thoughts, our thinking is not the same. And so says Rav Volbe that the idea of creation, which happens through one person, as the Torah tells it, it happens through one person, because we're supposed to see each individual as having that unique status as in context to the entire world. Each one is individual and has its own, his or her own sense of individuality. We see this as well from a beautiful Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein talks about how the pasuk goes in various locations, Hu Aaron and Moshe, Hu Moshe Aaron. And one pasuk, two pasukim in Shmos Perek Vav, goes back and forth at Aaron and Moshe, Moshe and Aaron. It takes them out of order, even though we know Aaron was older. So Rashi there says that Yesh Makom Shemaktim Aaron LaMoshe, Yesh Makom Shemaktim Moshe LaAaron. Lomer Lecha Sheshkulin Ke'echad. It's to teach us that they are equal, and one will go before the other sometimes, and one will go, you know, the other way around. So everybody wonders, I mean, were they really equal? I mean, that's hard to imagine. Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe, who had a more clear vision of God than any other human being ever. So Rav Moshe Feinstein explains beautifully. He says that to be equal, it does not mean that you had the same outcome. It just means that you are both doing as well as you possibly can with what you were given. That's the idea of equality. Every person is given a different amount of steps to climb, a different amount of effort to expend. Every person is given their own set of challenges, their own front line, their own trench. And so we need to advance the line as far as we can, given whatever it is that we are given. If Moshe and Aaron are both doing that, it doesn't matter how Aaron ends up not having quite the relationship with God that Moshe does. It doesn't matter. They are still considered equal because it's the effort and the energy expended which matters the most. Now, how does this come back to Yaakov and Esau? Because we have the very well-known comment of Rav Shamshon Feil Hirsch, who says that really what went wrong over here was the fact that this lesson of individuality was ignored by Yitzchak. I'm not sure why, and I'm not exactly sure why or where he gets this from in the text, but he points out how the pasuk tells us when they grew older, vayigdilu hanarim, vayhi Esav ish yodeat sayir ish sadeh, vayakov ish tam yoshev ohalim. They grew older, and hey, what do you know? One of them is the yodeat sayir, he's the hunter, and one of them is the ish tam, he's the yoshev ohalim. So says of Hirsch that what must have happened was that their differences were not noted until vayigdilu hanarim, until they had grown. And because their differences were not noted until they had grown, their differences ended up not being cultivated, and they were given the same education. Because they were given the same education, he writes, each child must be treated differently with an eye to the slumbering tendencies of his nature. The attributes of strength and courage are no less important before God than the ability to think lofty thoughts and have fine feelings. Every person, in the most varied ways of his calling, is to achieve the one great common task of life. And so each child, he says, must be brought up in the path of life to which his tendencies lead. Each person must approach the one great goal differently. To try to bring up a Yaakov and an Esav in the same college, make them have the same habits and hobbies, and to teach and educate them in the same way for some studious, sedate, meditative life is the surest way to court disaster. A Jacob will, with ever-increasing zeal, imbibe knowledge from the well of wisdom and truth, whereas an Esav can hardly wait for the time that he can throw away the books, and with it a whole purpose of life, for he has not learned to know life from one angle, and in a manner for which he can find no relation to his soul. And so he concludes this indictment by saying, had Isaac and Rebekah studied Esav's nature and character early enough and asked themselves, how can even an Esav, with all that strength and energy, agility and courage that lies slumbering in this child, be won over to be used in the service of God, etc., etc.? He wonders how Esav's sword and Yaakov's spirit could have worked hand in hand, how much differently history could have turned out. Now, this idea is very controversial because it's so critical of the parenting of Yitzchak and Rivka and how they parented, but it teaches a really important idea. In any event, I believe you don't need this reverse to teach this really important idea. According to Rashi, of course, Yitzchak was fooled by Esav, but he loved him because of that. But I always wondered, I said, listen, even if he wasn't fooled, he did know he was the hunter as opposed to Yaakov, who was the scholar. So even if he was a hunter who was a wicked person, as opposed to a hunter who Yitzchak thought was a righteous person, wouldn't you think he'd be more impressed with the scholar than the hunter? So it seems you don't need Rav Hirsch to understand that Yitzchak is appreciating Esav for who he is. He's appreciating the fact that in spite of what he was, he had the proclivities to do, despite what his skill set was, he was doing the best he could with that. And yes, he may ask simplistic questions of his father, and Yaakov might be studying and learning in the Beis Medrash at a much more advanced level. He appreciated Esav for the most that he was, and that's why, barring the fact that he was scammed and had the wool pulled over his eyes, he appreciated the son for who he was. And so altogether, we have this idea of individuality. A person has their own mission, has to understand that we're different than anybody else. We are unique. We could be Moshe, we could be Aaron, but we could be equal in the eyes of Hashem. Just a quote from Rabbi Akiva Tatz in his book called The Thinking Teenager's Guide to Life, Jewish Teenager's Guide to Life. He says, real happiness is what you experience when you are doing what you should be doing. When you're moving clearly along your own road, your unique path to your unique destination, you experience real happiness. When you are moving along the path that leads to yourself, to the deep discovery of who you really are, when you are building the essence of your own personality and creating yourself, a deep happiness wells up within you. The journey does not cause happiness. The journey is the happiness itself. I hope you all find our unique calling, the thing that we are meant to do, and compare ourselves not against others, but against the most important criteria, which is ourselves. Have a great day.